This is Diane Horn, your host on the sustainability segment of Mind Over Matters on KEXP Seattle 90.3 FM and on the web at kexp.org. My guest this morning is Eileen Quickly, Director of Strategic Innovation at Climate Solutions, a nonprofit that works to accelerate practical and profitable solutions to global warming. Eileen Quigley is here today to discuss the Northwest Biocarbon Initiative and tell us how it fits with other efforts by Climate Solutions to help prevent climate change. Welcome, Eileen.
Hi, thank you so much for having me.
Would you like to begin by saying a few words about Climate Solutions?
Yes, I'd be happy to. So Climate Solutions is celebrating its 15th anniversary, which is a milestone that we're very proud of, although the fact that we are still working so hard on climate change is not something that we're particularly happy about. I think we would have been happier at 15 years old to have said that we had reversed atmospheric concentrations of carbon dioxide, but unfortunately, as we know, we are continuing to pollute the atmosphere with carbon dioxide and other greenhouse gas emissions. So Climate Solutions has redoubled its efforts to find practical and profitable solutions to global climate change by bridging divides and growing investment.
What are the specific projects covered by strategic innovation at Climate Solutions?
Well, we have three projects that fall under our strategic innovation mantle. The first is the New Energy Cities Program, which has been around since 2009 and which is accelerating solutions in clean energy in small to medium-sized communities throughout the Northwest. So primarily this year, the New Energy Cities Program is concentrated in the communities around Seattle and King County and the communities in the metro area of Portland. Previously, we have actually been all around the Northwest with that program. And the goal there is to help cities set ambitious but achievable greenhouse gas emissions goals and then specific strategies to achieve them. Second program would be the Sustainable Advanced Fuels Program. And this is an outgrowth of our Sustainable Aviation Fuels Program, which was a partnership with Boeing, the ports of Portland, Spokane, Seattle, and Alaska Airlines, where we were looking for the critical path for an aviation fuel that could power our planes. And that is now expanded to sustainable advanced fuels for all motorized transport. And then the third is the Northwest Biocarbon Initiative. And this is what we call our second solution, where the first solution is to stop carbon dioxide and other greenhouse gas emissions and reverse our dependence on fossil fuel energy. And the second solution is to remove the carbon dioxide that's in the atmosphere. And so Northwest Biocarbon Initiative is looking at a wide range of solutions that span agriculture, forests, urban areas with green infrastructure, and aquatic areas such as blue carbon, which is in the ocean, and the wetlands. And we look for natural systems to remove and sequester or store carbon.
Let's now talk in detail about the Biocarbon Initiative. Would you elaborate on what biocarbon solutions are?
Biocarbon solutions are those that are working with our forests and soils and greening our communities, recycling organic residue, and blue carbon or wetland restoration. All of this work has been going on and is going on for lots of other reasons. Restoring our wetlands is valuable for our environment, and greening our communities and our cities is valuable for stormwater management. Managing our forests is valuable for restoring ecosystems and protecting endangered species. But we have found in recent years that all of these solutions also have this huge climate benefit, that they sequester carbon, which we have to do now that we have surpassed 350 parts per million of carbon dioxide in the atmosphere. We have to have solutions that also will take the carbon pollution out of the atmosphere. So we're turning to all these natural systems to help us restore our carbon balance throughout the world.
How much is actually known about the potential of these systems to sequester the carbon and actually make a difference for climate change?
So the study of biocarbon benefits is nascent, and we are beginning to understand the potential. One of the major initiatives of the Northwest Biocarbon Project is to actually develop those research documents and concretely determine what the full benefits are. But the way we look at it is there are three different categories under which the climate benefits can be measured. The first is the energy benefits. So in the case of the energy benefits, you are using a natural solution instead of an energy-intensive solution thereby meaning that you do not need to have fossil fuel-based energy to power something. So a specific example of that would be, in Houston, 663 million trees are providing cooling that reduces the need for air conditioning, which is valued at $131 million annually, while San Francisco's urban forest canopy saves an estimated $27 million in natural gas costs and $305 million in electricity. So there's savings there, obviously, to those cities, but then there's also a climate benefit where you're not using those fossil fuel-based energies. Another category would be the biocarbon benefits, and by that we mean how much are we able to store. So in this case, an example of that would be Portland's Great Green Initiative. In Portland, they've planted nearly 30,000 trees, they've completed 800 green roofs, they've developed nearly 800 green streets, and developed nearly 400 green roofs. EcoTrust did a study that examined the biocarbon storage potential of Portland's urban forests and streamside habitats, and they found that these benefits could double the biocarbon stored each year to over 485,000 tons of carbon dioxide per year. So that's a concrete example of a biocarbon benefit. The third category is climate resilience. So we all know that climate change is here, and we have to prepare for it, and that's what the resilience piece is, or adaptation. So not only do these strategies reduce carbon pollution that we're adding to the atmosphere, absorb carbon pollution that we added in the past, but they also can enhance our community's resilience. In this case, the Manchester, England study found that increasing tree cover by 10% would keep the city's temperatures stable, even as the broader climate warmed under future climate change scenarios, while a loss of 10% in tree cover in the city would magnify future increases in the temperature by 12 degrees Fahrenheit. So as you can see, there's a wide range of angles from which to evaluate the climate benefits of biocarbon in those three categories: energy benefits, biocarbon benefits, and climate resilience benefits.
So what exactly is the Northwest Biocarbon Initiative? What is your specific plan?
So the initiative is building the movement for, first and foremost, understanding the biocarbon potential. As I said before, it's nascent, not widely understandable. So what we've done first is bring together a group of, we call them innovation partners. And these are people throughout the Northwest who are in different practices: wetlands restoration, agriculture and soil, forestry, and then urban green infrastructure. And one of the first goals of the Northwest Biocarbon Initiative was to introduce all of these different practitioners to each other, essentially to break down the silos among them and between them, so that they would see that even though they were working in different landscapes, how much similarity there is across their work. So the first is, it's been a convening, it's been a movement building, and it's been an opportunity for various scientists, academicians, and people working in the restoration economy to come together and learn from each other and share their best practices. The second aspect of the Northwest Biocarbon Initiative is research, attempting to quantify in meaningful ways the economic and climate benefits of biocarbon so that we can build into our solutions or our toolkit to climate change the solutions that have value. And we need to be able to demonstrate to cities, to businesses, to nonprofit organizations, to communities, to citizens, that in addition to reducing carbon emissions, we also have to invest in re-greening our world.
I'm Diane Horn, and my guest is Eileen Quigley, Director of Strategic Innovation at Climate Solutions. Our topic is the Northwest Biocarbon Initiative, and you are tuned to the sustainability segment of Mind Over Matters on listener-powered KEXP Seattle 90.3 FM and on the web at kexp.org. Would you comment specifically on how biocarbon concepts and efforts could be incorporated into public policy?
That's actually a very good question, because a third very important part of the Northwest Biocarbon Initiative is looking at policy at a federal, state, and local level to determine what are the mechanisms that we need to put into place to fund as well as elevate the potential for biocarbon. So at an urban or a city level, we look to communities like Portland and Seattle, Philadelphia, and others, and throughout the country that have put in strong stormwater and green streets, eco roof, all kinds of policies and ordinances that would encourage regreening what are essentially concrete landscapes. So there's a whole set of policies at the local and county level that we are evaluating and then recommending. At the state level, the state agencies, such as Ecology and others in different states, all have oversight over our natural systems. And, you know, I've been working on preserving natural systems since they were created. So we look at ways of using existing state laws that are already geared towards preserving our environments and our natural resources, but now being able to further empower those regulations because we now understand there's a climate benefit. So we're not just trying to preserve the forests for endangered species, but we're actually looking at preserving them because they may be a huge part of our climate solution. That's another level. At the federal level, as you may know, in President Obama's climate speech in June, he actually referenced the importance of using natural systems as part of our climate solution. So we know that at different departments at the federal level, there are also policy options. Now, in a perfect world, we would have some kind of carbon pricing mechanism throughout the nation, or we would have a suite of climate policies that would include biocarbon as well.
Let's talk now about the report you just released titled Natural Infrastructure, a Climate Smart Solution. Would you elaborate on what you consider to be natural infrastructure?
Yes, so we chose the term natural infrastructure as opposed to green infrastructure because the green infrastructure term really refers to urban solutions around stormwater management. And we are talking about something much broader landscape. So natural infrastructure is a broad enough term to encompass forests, soil, agriculture, and aquatic, you know, wetland and ocean, which is the blue carbon. So that's what the term natural infrastructure is. The report is an attempt to gather together the highlights of natural infrastructure solutions that are in the Northwest. We also looked more broadly. We looked for, particularly when we were looking for quantification of the climate benefits of biocarbon, we did look at other studies in other cities, such as Houston and Philadelphia, where we could find that research. As I had said earlier, this is very new. So we did a literature search to try and see where there were climate benefits to biocarbon. So while the Northwest is a leader in biocarbon solutions, it's not the only place in the country where natural infrastructure and biocarbon are being studied and used and implemented.
What are the key findings of your report?
The key findings are that we have multiple public benefits to biocarbon. So we've addressed some of the climate benefits, or we've talked about the three different categories before: the energy benefits, the biocarbon benefits, and then the climate resilience benefits. But in addition to those, which obviously are a focus of a climate-oriented approach, we've also found numerous economic benefits in the way of cost savings. And then, of course, public health benefits because you're purifying the air and you're purifying the water, and beautification. And so there turns out to be this very interesting mix of benefits beyond just one set. And also, I think that before, when we were talking about the Northwest Biocarbon Initiative, we were talking about how we're trying to de-siloize or help these different practitioners across these different landscapes understand that their work has similarities. The report really demonstrated that because we looked at a variety of examples throughout the different landscapes.
What would be an example of different groups getting together and synergizing with each other where some new idea or a new project came forward?
Well, we held the Northwest Biocarbon Summit on June 10th here in Seattle. And the purpose of the summit was for all these different practitioners to present their work. And so one of the seminars that I remember distinctly was the economic benefits of biocarbon solutions. And we had a gentleman from Verde, which is a nonprofit in Portland that is working to green communities in low-income neighborhoods. And so the work that he's doing is all about bringing jobs fundamentally to a low-income neighborhood and teaching restoration techniques to people who actually live in communities and bringing jobs. So there was a huge economic focus. But then he's also learning about the climate benefits from this and the public health benefits. So his focus was that, but there he was on a panel with a restoration economist who was talking about wetland restoration and the ways in which he's working with native communities. So all of a sudden, these two people are working in very different environments in the biocarbon economy, but have a lot of similarities, cross-pollinating that way. We had a series of speed talks where scientists and people who are running various biocarbon projects got up and spoke, and they had to summarize in 10 minutes or less precisely what their projects were. And just seeing each of them speak, again, across all these landscapes, you kept seeing the themes of resilience, of energy benefit, of cost savings, and of course of carbon storage.
You are tuned to the sustainability segment of Mind Over Matters on KEXP Seattle 90.3 FM and on the web at kexp.org. I'm Diane Horn, and my guest is Eileen Quigley, Director of Strategic Innovation at Climate Solutions. Our topic is the Northwest Biocarbon Initiative. Would you give some additional specific examples of Northwest natural infrastructure projects that help reduce greenhouse gas emissions? You alluded to a few earlier, but there are additional favorite ones you might want to mention.
I don't know if I have a favorite. One project that I found particularly intriguing is the Albany Millersburg Talking Gardens project. It's a public works project that cools treated wastewater before it enters the Willamette River. And the way it works is that higher temperature waterways had been leading to a decline in cold water fish. And the temperature in the waterways was being elevated because a metals manufacturer, ATI Huacheng, which is a company down in Albany, had been using the area to discharge its water. So the cities of Albany and Millersburg partnered with ATI Huacheng, which had to relocate its point of discharge, and they decided to build this combined wastewater treatment wetland. And it is a project that's naturally aerating and treating water by reducing pollutant levels, including removing 2,000 pounds per day of nitrogen and 40 pounds per day of phosphorus. It's promoting wildlife habitat in a former industrial area. It's created a living laboratory that brings wetland science to life for K through 12 and university students. And it's now a new natural attraction for the city of Albany, integrating the site and the history of the Willamette River. So it's a 30-acre site. It has wetland vegetation and an acre of riparian forest and 5 acres of oak savanna, and it will remove tons of carbon dioxide from the atmosphere annually and store it in the soil, in the sediments, and in the plants. They've created waterfalls throughout the Talking Gardens to help curb the production of methane, which is a significant greenhouse gas, and that can be created in wetlands as organic matter breaks down in the absence of oxygen. And so it's helping to make sure that the project is also a win for the climate. So this, to me, is a fascinating project because it's combining all these different benefits in one. It also, it's important to note that it was a much cheaper solution for ATI Huacheng to do this wetland restoration rather than go and spend hundreds of thousands, if not millions of dollars, on a new discharge plant and all the other. Again, you choose a green solution instead of a gray, which is the concrete, and you find that it has not only the economic benefit, but also the climate and environmental benefit. That's one that is interesting to me. So here in King County, the wastewater treatment division at King County, they like to talk about how King County's biosolids are an endlessly renewable resource. So this is cleaning up our wastewater, right, here in King County, and it's in an energy-intensive process. But wastewater treatment division is about 70% of the way toward its goal of becoming a carbon-neutral wastewater utility. So what it does is it's harvesting methane gas that's generated by its digesters for both electricity and heat, and it returns biosolids residuals to the land, which is a carbon-rich soil amendment, and it's full of micro and macronutrients that healthy plants need. So the carbon benefits are three-dimensional. They enhance the growth of trees and other plants that store carbon. They reduce the need for synthetic fertilizers that are fossil fuel intensive to produce. And they increase the storage of carbon in our soils. It's another local one that's interesting. Another really interesting project in the area of absorbing water in rainstorms is the Portland bioretention facilities. So these are being constructed in the southeast part of Portland in roughly 500 locations. And they are small, dispersed facilities that are intended to reduce sewer backups that occur with heavy rainfall. And they increase overall sewer capacity, and they improve watershed health because they infiltrate runoff and they add vegetation. So these are flat-bottom planters and V-shaped swales in a variety of configurations that are adapted to the space constraints that you have in an urban environment. They have about 18 inches of bioretention soil, so it's compost and mineral soil blend, and they provide water treatment and infiltration and support plants through wet and dry seasons.
So going forward, which natural infrastructure projects are most likely to be effective, and how do you prioritize them?
As I said, there are different projects in the different landscapes, and so I actually think your question is at the heart of what we really need to be studying. And if we're looking at carbon storage, then assessing the carbon storage of our forests and looking at the question of cutting and thinning and the use of timber and forests is certainly a key priority. There's definitely significant carbon sequestration value in that, and one of our initiatives is to try and do a full accounting of the timber and trees and forest and the climate benefit of their sequestration. So that would certainly be a priority. Blue carbon is fascinating and quite new and could be potentially huge. So blue carbon, just to be clear, is the natural systems, grasslands, the mangroves in our Florida, and all of the areas around shoreline. And they are proving to hold huge potential for carbon storage. So that's an area that is very exciting and new and starting to get a great deal of attention. Because in addition to the biocarbon storage, there's also the resilience benefits of encouraging wetlands. As the seas rise, as storms increase, we need to figure out how to buffer our communities, our civilization, and building up the wetlands has the resilience benefit, and it also has a carbon benefit. So there's a lot of interesting research in that. The green storm water initiatives are absolutely crucial in cities because cities are so concrete dependent, which creates what's known as the heat island effect. And we're learning that if we can use a great deal of green infrastructure on our roofs in as many places as possible, if we can get green where there is currently concrete, we are able to reduce the temperatures of the cities as well as capture the rain, which we talked about before. But we're going to need that also in light of increasing temperatures. So the more we can cool our cities down with green infrastructure and natural infrastructure, that will have a huge benefit. And then the soil may be, in fact, the most exciting and the most interesting. The biocarbon, carbon storage benefits of soil are potentially huge. And just globally, in order for us to survive as a planet and feed ourselves, given increased population, we have to amend our soil and replace our soil at a greater rate than we have been using this. And it turns out that in addition to that fundamental fact that we need to have good soil so that we can survive and raise our food, again, it's turning out that there could be huge biocarbon benefits in this, which would help us remove carbon pollution from the atmosphere. So it would be hard for me to say that any one is more important or has more benefit, but the soil in all of those other, right? The soil is the very basis of trees are in the soil and all of the infrastructures in the soil. So I'd say that I wouldn't want to have to choose among them. I think they're all crucially important.
What are your specific next steps in the Northwest Biocarbon Initiative?
So this research piece is very important. And this paper that we have issued is a compendium of what we found now, and what we learned from it is how important it is to find the funding and support the various scientists, academicians, and practitioners in the biocarbon community who are studying the climate, as well as these other benefits of biocarbon. So that's a crucial initiative. The second is to continue to get the notion of biocarbon out there. It's really not something that has been discussed as much as other climate mitigating solutions. And while it's crucial that we continue our efforts to decrease the use of fossil fuel and decrease greenhouse gas emissions, it's becoming equally crucial that we figure out how to remove the carbon from the atmosphere, because we have to do both. We've gone past the point at which we can't do both. So education, frankly, is a huge part of our initiative here. And then continuing to build the community, continuing to identify the innovation partners, continuing to bring them together to elevate their research. And then the fourth is policy, figuring out exactly what policies are needed at different levels, working with others in the climate community and the economic development community. There's a wide number of constituents that we think we can partner with to build the case for investments in biocarbon.
What's the message you'd like to leave our listeners with?
I think what I'd like to say is that we all have a part to play in promulgating biocarbon solutions, even in a concrete city, that we all have the opportunity to plant and to further our natural systems. And I think that an awareness of our individual impacts is important. I think that climate change is a very scary and very complicated topic. And I think that sometimes it is overwhelming to people to think, oh, there's nothing that can be done. We've already gone too far. And a lot of these more negative thoughts. And I don't believe that's true. I actually believe that we are at a point of awakening where all throughout the world, people are recognizing just how dire our situation is. And I guess the message I would leave people with is, there are many solutions that are right here, right at our fingertips, if we just all say yes to addressing climate change, and each individually taking whatever steps he or she can in their own life to support climate-friendly behavior, but also to not give up, because we're at a point where we're finally coming together and recognizing that climate change is real, and that we all have a part to play in addressing it.
Well, thanks so much for being here, Eileen.
You're welcome. Thank you for having me.
You were just listening to Eileen Quigley, Director of Strategic Innovation at Climate Solutions. For more information, check on the web at climatesolutions.org. Sustainability segment interviews are available as podcasts, along with KEXP's music podcasts. Go to kexp.org, click on Demand, and then Podcasting. I'm Diane Horn. Thanks for listening. And be sure to tune in to the sustainability segment again next week on listener-powered 90.3 FM and KEXP.org.